should do it. It feels pretty good.
I'm scared.
You can do it. Come on.
Okay.
Big deep breath.
Okay, should I do a deep voice or a high-pitched voice?
I don't know. I think your high-pitched voice might scare him off. Why don't you just kind of in the middle?
Hey.
Oh, that's worse.
No, that's bad.
You've been watching too much Yellowstone. Okay, take it away.
Hi, guys. Welcome back to the Ski or Die podcast. I'm your host, Stevie Island.
And I'm Elizabeth Montsevan, and I'm very sorry you had to hear that. It feels good, though, right?
I like the deep one better.
Okay, well, we'll keep that in mind, and probably never do that again. Anyway, what's up, you guys? We're back, and it's been a minute, but we want to quickly do a life update, right?
So we took a bout over in Europe.
Yep.
It was an amazing trip. We were doing three water ski pro tour stops, and also the Masters qualifiers in Spain.
Yep.
So that was an amazing experience.
My first Euro tour, your first Euro tour. Mm-hmm. There was 5 tournaments we could have gone to in total, for men and women. 6 if you had wanted to go to Funglis, which was just men's slalom only. But yeah, we budgeted for 4. It was 4 events over 3 weeks. Let me tell you, skiing 3 pro events in 7 days was one of the hardest experiences I've ever been through.
It was definitely tricky, you know, with the logistics of the flights, you know, making sure that your skis get on the plane and don't get lost. We did have a little bit of a situation when we flew to Monaco, or Nice.
Yeah, right.
From Madrid.
So we skied first outside of Madrid. That was a weekend. Then we went to Nice because we had to get to Monaco for a Wednesday pro event. And then we went from Monaco to Bordeaux, back to France for a Saturday event. So we only had Thursday to get to Bordeaux and get practice. We had to get up at 3 a.m. for the 7 a.m. flight?
Yeah.
And then don't even get me started on how much food poisoning I had, everybody had throughout the trip in Europe. It was just like, oh my God, fighting to stay alive.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, you have those tough logistics moments, but it's so worth it on the back end because you have these amazing experiences at these sites that are so beautiful, so well run, and the people are so enjoyable. The culture is so enjoyable. Mm-hmm. You get to experience the amazing food, and it's just all around just an amazing experience. And when you're skiing on a lake and the Prince of Monaco's watching.
I'm not complaining at all. The fact that the Prince of Monaco dropped down in his helicopter, because he used to ski himself. I don't know if you know that. I mean, I've never had royalty watch me ski.
It was an amazing experience. The whole trip was fantastic. Greece was amazing. George put on such an epic event with a DJ on the dock, and the energy was just so vibrant. Everyone there was such a huge water ski fan. All the locals came out.
I can't say I've never been treated like that before in my life. As an athlete, at anything ever.
Cave diving,
yeah, that was a cool field trip. But even like in Greece, one of the event sponsors was a jeweler. And for all the finalists, they had custom jewelry made. So if you made the finals, you already kind of won something. Didn't expect that. Not something I would ever expect. I don't even know if I necessarily deserve it, right? But it was just a really sweet touch. And I wear it every day. I mean, I see these little Greek letters on my wrist, and I don't even know what they say, but it reminds me of that really special trip.
And the food was paid for by George.
It was great food.
It was great food, and it was just great hospitality, and it was fantastic. We wanted to do a little touch on the trip and how awesome it was. And
I would recommend if you ever, because how many of them were pro-ams? All of them?
Not Lacano, right?
No, that was a pro-am. There was amateurs that skied. Remember? Before women.
Oh, shoot. It was just less.
Yeah. So if you ever want to do a pro-am and you've, like, thought about doing one in Europe, go just for the fun of it, the experience. I highly recommend. You will be treated with just the utmost hospitality. And there's cool stuff to see. And not that we don't love an American tournament, right? I mean, home is home. But, yeah, like in Monaco, it's crazy. The fans are all there in like head-to-toe white with little straw hats, like they're watching tennis or something. I was like, I don't know if we deserve to feel this posh. And the espresso machines on site at every lake. Why don't American sites have espresso machines at the lake?
I think that should be a mandatory requirement.
You want to join AWSA as a ski club, you have to buy an espresso machine. New rule.
All right, well, let's get right into the topic of the day. Do you work out or ski when you're sore?
Ooh, this is a big one.
I think it's a little convoluted, and I think people have the wrong idea, mm-hmm. personally, but what's your take?
I mean, I feel like I can answer this in, like, two sentences, and we can move on, but I think we're going to discuss it a little bit. So I see people go down two paths when it comes to, like, show up at the lake, and I'm sore today, right? And I see people who stretch, they foam roll, they massage something, they use a lacrosse ball, they work some of that lactic acid out of their muscles, which that is what soreness is, right? It's lactic acid built up in the muscles. They work some of that out, they end up feeling a little bit better, and then they go ski, they build some endurance, and then they go from there. Over time, that process leads to them being a little less sore. Of course, rest days are important. I'm not saying no rest days. So there's like that path. Then I think the other path I see people go down is they ski, they show up to the lake, they say, I'm really sore, I'm not going to do anything about that, and I certainly don't want to have a bad set because I'm sore, so I'm not going to ski. So I'm going to take a day or two off. And then they show up again and take a set, and because they were sore, didn't stretch, now they're even tighter, they ski again, they're more sore, and it just kind of like, it's this vicious cycle downward where they are skiing less and less and less than they ever have in their life, and they don't understand why they don't feel stronger, taking more time off. And you never get stronger by doing less. You can be more well-rested, but in terms, soreness comes from not having the strength to endure a specific activity for a certain amount of time, if I had to kind of like very loosely define it, right? Mm-hmm. So to be less sore, you need to ski at least like at a maintenance level or more, in my opinion, in my experience. And I think it really comes down to that, what do you do before you ski to remove that lactic acid? And I mean, we should really talk about how we feel when we wake up in the morning versus when we've stretched versus like then when we actually go to ski. It's three very different.
Yeah, it's very tricky because I think most people would say do what works best for you. And I think that's it's a slippery slope because maybe you're not as educated with how your body feels, and maybe you simply just don't know what's going on when you are sore. There's a difference between, you know, a tight muscle and injured muscle, and, you know, things that you need to lay off of and things that you are fine to work through. Mm-hmm. So I feel like learning what you can manage and what you can work through is important, because then if you're able to work through something, then you're going to get stronger on the back end. And if you're able to, you know, get knowledgeable on what stretches and what things off the water you can do to help, whether it's before you're skiing or after you're skiing or just throughout your day, you know, that's huge. Like for me, I had 3 bulging discs in my back, right, when I was 20 years old, and I've been dealing with it ever since. And I've had some really hard times where I had to get 3 epidural injections in my back, so I've had, you know, some serious stuff go down with my back. But, you know, of course, the entire time I've been trying to ski at a high level and also, you know, cross-train with CrossFit, and all that is a huge demand, is very demanding of the lower back. Okay, so what did I do? I tried to educate myself on what I could possibly do to get to a maintenance level. And that involves things like learning specific stretches, PT moves, PT exercises that I can do either throughout my day before I ski or before I work out. And also, you know, learning how to brace in the gym, learning how to brace in the water, how to use my glutes more to protect my back, how to ski better. Skiing better always helps your lower back, you know what I mean? All these things have helped me get to a maintenance level. When I wake up in the morning, sometimes my back isn't 100%. Actually, most of the time it's around like 80, 90%. Even when it dips down to close to 60%, I think I can still ski, and I get out there and I still work it, and I'm able to get through it without re-injuring my back.
And what, so when you wake up and your back's at 60%, or let's say 75%, mm-hmm. What behavior is pivotal in making it possible for you to still ski that day? Because lower back injuries are like very common in our sport, and they can be life altering if not tended to correctly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have all of my stretches that I do beforehand, and usually when it feels worse, I'm going to spend more time stretching and more time making sure that the disc is in the right place, you know, doing back extensions to push the disc back into place, doing my stretching, icing the night before to take the inflammation down. I mean, of course, I'm never going to ice prior to skiing, but making sure that I'm stretching as much as I possibly can to get that, you know, blood in that area to make sure that it's nice and loose and not going to, you know, be super tight and then have a really, you know, this life altering, like you said, injury happen where the disc is going to herniate. And so that's the tricky thing is like when you wake up in the morning, I feel like if you're really trying to push it on the water, if you're really trying to get better, you're not going to wake up and feel 100%. Like right. It's going to be rare. Right?
I think especially that's a really if you're cross training. Point. Yeah.
Especially if you're cross training. If you're cross training, you're going to be sore, you're going to be fatigued. You're still going to have to work through that. And I know this episode is going to draw attention because I know people are going to be like, well, man, I think that's wrong. I think you need to rest more. I think you're overtraining yourself, which is fair. I get that idea, but there has to be a balance you can achieve, right? Like you can't feel 100% all the time. You just can't when you're trying to push yourself. If you're trying to get to a higher level in a sport, you just, even in music, if I practice for 6 hours a day, I mean, you can get injured. I've been injured skiing. I've strained my hand. I've, you know, sitting in a chair. I want you to talk on, you know, if you're an office worker or, you know, if you're sitting in a car, if you drive a lot, what kind of effect that can have as well.
Well, I think in two things I really like that you pointed out there was that there's a difference between skiing through an injury and skiing when you're feeling sore, right? We would never say you should always ski through an injury. That is so case by case and requires like a professional opinion. When I was hurt last year and my PT said, I want you to start skiing as soon as you can without an intense amount of pain, that was very much unique to me and my situation, totally different. But I also like that you point out is that like a lot of mornings we don't feel 100%. I'm not talking about quantity of sleep. That's different. Just body wear and tear. You don't usually wake up feeling like a million bucks. It's what you do right after you wake up or within those first few hours of the day that are going to have you leaning towards feeling like a million bucks or not. And even if you aren't somebody who skis regularly, to answer your question about sitting at a desk or driving a car a lot, even that, the postures that our world has geared us towards now, where we are looking down at a device or our shoulders are forward because we're typing or we're holding onto a steering wheel, all of that is still gonna lead to a misaligned neck, you know, your chin jutted out, soreness in the upper back as a result. Your body's gonna start to compensate for those things that are very much integrally part of our day. So even if you're not skiing a lot, your day-to-day life is having an effect on your body that warrants some kind of stretching or mobility work for you to feel better than when you originally woke up in the morning. And there's this really lovely woman who works out at our gym around the same time we go every evening. And I forget what she does for work. I think she's a teacher. Oh, I feel terrible. It's like totally escaping my mind right now. But she's been really into CrossFit. And she really just puts, I mean, her all into it. In such a short amount of time, she's developed so much strength and skill. But she tweaked her shoulder. And I asked her why, and she said, well, I never stretch, never do mobility stuff. I didn't know. Now I do all my stretches. I'm feeling much better. And I said, oh, yeah. I said, I'm grateful I ski in the mornings because then I do all my warm-ups and stretches in the morning. So then the rest of the day, I feel pretty good. You know, I said, if I ever had to quit skiing, I think I would still be a person who stretched in the morning right after they woke up.
Well, even on our day off, we do.
Right. And she said, I never thought of that. She goes, maybe I should stretch in the morning. And I said, you'll have a better day overall. I mean, even if you don't come to the gym that night,
yeah,
your day is going to be better.
And get moving, you know, just get some the blood moving through your body.
Right.
Like, if you get out of bed and just sit at a desk, like, immediately, there's no circulation.
No.
Your limbs are just does not have the proper amount of blood in them, and you're just gonna feel like shit. I mean,
you know, something else I like that you touched on was the idea of icing, and of course you don't want to ice before you ski. But this spring we bought that portable ice bath, so it doesn't cool itself, right? We add water and we add ice to it. But that has been a big game changer for me as well. That's kind of the not mobility related, but in terms of like inflammation and swelling and soreness. That being able to bring my core temp down and really fully ice my body. There's a difference between sitting on an ice pack for your low back and submerging your whole low back in ice water.
Yeah.
That's been really good for me.
I don't know much about the mental gains you can get from doing ice bath. I know, like, a lot of people say, oh, you know, it's really good for your brain chemistry. I don't know anything about that.
Skiing's hard enough. Ice is easy.
I don't know brain chemical stuff. But I do know that I didn't know before, what I learned when we got that is that when your core body temperature is raised and you're just constantly, you know, hot as a human being, your core temp, your recovery is worse. So I'm always thinking about, like, how can I recover better? Because we do so much in a day. Mm-hmm. For me, cutting the booze out, you know, drinking less always helps.
Yeah.
And core temp, if I can get my core temp to be less hot in the summer, those are the two things that make the biggest difference in my recovery personally. Obviously stretching is a huge one, but I feel like that's obvious. I just never knew, you know, 2 years ago, I had no idea how much that plays a part in your recovery.
And when you want to look at, like, the science of it, when your core temp is high, inflammation is present, like, usually where there's heat. So if you can push some of that heat out, you're going to have inflammation go down. So there's going to be more blood that moves to those muscles so they can recover faster. And when you cut out booze, you are cutting out alcohol, which is something that dries things out, right? So you're pulling less water out of your muscles so they can stay hydrated and recover faster as well. So it totally correlates.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool.
And, you know, we live in an extreme environment. When we say our core temp gets high, this summer the water got to 98 degrees, and there was many days where it was over, like, 101, 102. So when you wake up in the morning, you're outside and it's 100, you get in the water, it's 98, your core temp is going to get so high, and it's going to stay high. Sitting in AC for us wasn't enough to bring it down, so, like, thank God we had gotten on the ice bath train. But, I mean, even when you think about it, if your summers, you're outside and it's hot, if it's 85, 90, if you're in the sun a lot, your core temp is just going to inherently be a little higher. And all these little things add up, right? Your core temp, how much alcohol you consume. Do you stretch? How often do you stretch? Are you starting to ski less because you're sore? Okay. And you can start a positive cycle or a negative cycle.
Yeah. If you just bring the awareness level a little higher and you also, you know, have an idea of what you want, if you want to feel better and you want to be less sore, you know, there are recovery tools out there that'll help you achieve that, and to, you know, be more mindful of that from your day to day. It's not all about just on the water, right? So that's something to keep in mind. One thing I wanted to bring up and ask you is, if you stretch at home and then get in the car and drive 15 minutes to the lake, do you have to stretch again?
I think it's like, okay, if I wanted to paint a house, right, I wanted to change the color. Let's say it's gray. And I prime it first. Technically change the color. Like, job is technically done. But is the look of primer really the finish you're going for? Probably not. If my dad was here, he would say, absolutely not. You need an exterior paint. So I think stretching before you get in the car is great, especially if you know, like, where you're going. Ultimately, you won't have a lot of time. And if sitting in the car is bad for you, if you're going to sit in the car for a long time, yeah, please stretch before. But I think once you get to the lake, if you can quickly walk through everything because it's already primed, right, I think that's better than getting right out of the car and skiing. Because King of Darkness, I threw my back out, getting out of the water, bulged a disc in my back. I had done all my normal warm-ups and stretching, but I had sat in the car so much in the drive and then sat in the car because it was hot to wait to ski, sitting. Even though I'd done all my stretches, you're always at risk. And there was stuff I should have done more of, probably, to prime my glute muscles to engage when I was getting out of the water. But I just kind of let my glutes go. I take getting out of the water for granted.
Yeah.
Slipped the disc. Had to ski Swiss Pro with a slipped disc. Painful experience, terrible experience. Like, why did I do that to myself? What my awareness level was lower than it should have been. I was thinking about the skiing and not the lead up, probably.
Yeah, and, like, I think, you know, we're gonna be on a different level of hyper awareness and psycho-ness. Like, you don't have to go psycho about it, but I think, just like I said, if you bring your awareness level up and you think about how your body's feeling, and not be afraid to understand, not be afraid to know that something's hurting a little bit. Mm-hmm. You can be aware of that hurt and prime yourself for success and still ski.
Yeah.
Rather than, ooh, my muscle hurts today, I need to take the day off. Like, that's not necessarily what has to happen. And I think people get caught in that.
I mean, what's the saying? That we have proven time and time again, a tight muscle is a weak muscle. Mm-hmm. So if you need your core to engage to protect your low back, but your abs and your intercostals are just wicked tight, like your upper hip flexors, if that's all tight, mm-hmm. it's not going to engage. Your ribs are going to be glued together and something's going to give, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a disc or a bone.
Yeah.
So a tight muscle, if you want to feel stronger, in theory, you need looser muscles.
Yes. And I think, you know, we talk about strength to weight ratio in skiing so frequently. You know, like the best of the best have the most freakish strength to weight ratio.
Ooh, something I'm excited about this year. I've had a good strength to weight ratio this year, so I'm happy.
But I think we focus a little too much on that, and we don't focus enough on flexibility and mobility. I think the best of the best are also like freakishly flexible and mobile, specific to skiing.
Yeah.
And I think one of the best things I granted myself was the ability to work on mobility and flexibility, and that's what's helped me, you know, be less injured or injury prone, I should say, in skiing at a high level. Like that's why I love CrossFit. I know people think it's too intense and crazy, but like I'm so much more flexible and mobile now. I wasn't able to even do an overhead squat with the barbell before. And now, you know, I can do it with weight and everything. That tells me so much. Like my shoulders feel so much more strong, and you know, I've been able to strengthen everything that needs to strengthen in order to protect myself. It's almost like I'm just trying to protect myself. And I think you can do that through flexibility and mobility. And if you want an app that's really helpful, I would recommend GoWad. GoWad mobility app.
It has a new name now.
Does it?
Pliability.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they've rebranded. It's really cool. Really cool, like, the way they rebranded. Very user-friendly platform. But yes.
Oh, I didn't know they rebranded.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of people don't. They've had a hard time finding the original because it's a very different name change.
Okay.
But they were trying to branch out from being just CrossFit specific, because that's why we're having this conversation.
Right.
Everybody needs mobility help, and they kind of had cornered themselves into a very big but one market. And pliability, it applies to all of us.
Right. Makes sense. Okay. Very cool.
But I mean, yeah, you're right. It is all about protection and strength to weight ratio. It's a both and conversation. Mobility and the appropriate strength to weight ratio. Mm-hmm. One cannot succeed without the other. Mm-hmm. If I said, think of somebody you know who is uber bendy but doesn't run the scores they want to run because they don't have the strength to, I'm sure you can think of somebody. Mm-hmm. I know who I'm thinking of. And then we know people who they have a lot of strength, but they almost get their position like in the course or on a trick ski, it looks stuck because they can't move. Their ankles just don't bend or whatever.
Less dynamic. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I think that's a very, very important conversation. Yeah, Rose? I wonder if they heard that.
Big, big breath from Rosie.
Big sighs. She's worked on her strength to weight ratio this year too. She had some knee problems.
She's killing it.
Yeah, she's doing really good. Brain keeps her on her toes.
Was there any last minute things you want to touch on before we wrap it up?
Oh, I'm sure something's going to come to me the minute we stop recording. But I think that this is a super important conversation. It's specific to every skier, but you can't be afraid to dabble and tweak your ratio of all of these components that we've spoken about.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to learn. Like, I feel like it all stems from an education on your body and what's going on with you. I mean, everyone has their specific thing. Like, oh, my hip's tight. Oh, my knee's fucked up or whatever. You know, I mean, like, everyone has their thing. And no one's going to learn more about that injury than you, because you're the one dealing with it every day. So
I think also, you know, if you really quiet your mind and listen, I think your gut kind of knows what you need. And it comes from a place of fear. When I tweaked my back this spring, and our PT said I needed to stretch out my hip flexors, and I was going to do it in the living room, do you remember what I told you when I set up to do them? Do you remember like that?
Not really.
Great.
I don't listen to you, babe.
Every part of my being was like, you're going to tear your hip flexors off.
Mm.
And you were like, honey, you're not going to tear your hip flexors. It's going to be, just get into the stretch. Because I'd literally never stretched my hip flexors before, because I didn't know it was a problem. So tight muscle is a weak muscle, everything we've talked about. And like every part of my gut was like, this is going to be so painful. Don't do this. And that's usually the stretch you need to do.
Hmm.
You don't need to like kill it. Like don't hurt yourself. But I needed to get started. And honestly, I don't think I gained any mobility in the first 2 weeks of doing it. I probably looked like I was just holding a position, not gaining any stretch. But now I get into it, I can sink lower into it, it doesn't scare me, it doesn't hurt. Like, it's that first, you know, I'll say 2 weeks, I don't know what you think, of working on a brand new stretch. We're like, oh, never stretched this before.
Oh, you'll notice a difference in 2 days. Are you kidding me? It's like it'll be a exponential effect and then it'll plateau.
But I think it takes longer than 2 days.
If it's really tight, you'll notice immediate relief. Like, okay, back pain 101, in my opinion, if you can't touch your toes, but lay flat in your back, take a strap or even your ski handle.
A belt.
Put it on your foot, lay flat on your back, let's start with your right leg, left leg flat, right leg up in the air, and you pull with a straight knee. Mm-hmm. You hold that position for 30 seconds at a time, do 3 sets of 30, do it on the left one. You will feel immediate relief in your lower back because it's decompressing your spine. Your hamstring is pulling on all those muscles and it's compressing all your vertebrae, and that's where the pain is originating from. If you loosen up your hamstring, all of a sudden that gets loosened up, it stops pulling as much, it decompresses it all, and you feel so much better. So
yeah, if you wanted a specific take-home thing, I think that is a good one. A lot of people like to bend over and touch their toes for their hamstring stretch, but the problem with that much hinging is it compresses the low back. So that laying on your back, that extremely passive hamstring stretch where you wrap the rope around your foot and pull it towards your face, again, things that have been much better for me in terms of like a hamstring stretch that I think all skiers could benefit from. No skiers need low back pain, torque, pressure, compression.
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah, it's so much low back shit. Another really good one is, everyone talks about pigeon, but what I've learned is that pigeon on the floor isn't as good if you do it elevated. So if you have a box, or even if you have like a
bench,
pickup truck,
a counter, yeah.
Or a bench, and you do it on the tailgate of your pickup truck, if you do the same pigeon pose where your knee is kind of at a 90-ish degree angle, and you hinge over your knee, and you get that glute med stretch, that is like money.
I'm going to be a bit more extreme. So pigeon is terrible. Floor pigeon is terrible for water skiers. And I know it's a core of yoga. So I asked a PT, I said, well, how do all these yogis do it if it's so bad for them? And like, why would it be included? Yoga is good for you. Like, explain. And he said to me, back then, they didn't know as much about anatomy as we do now. He's like, so for your sport, pigeon is bad for you. Sorry. Like, it might be fine for yogis, but you need to do it standing with, you know, your shin up on a box or a bench or a counter or something like that. So, no more floor pigeon. And you guys have your homework. 2 stretches, go.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm glad that we went into specific stretches. That's so nerdy and
we talked
weird.
About not doing exactly that.
But the reason why we like talk about it with such enthusiasm is because it makes us feel so much better. And it's just such a benefit to our lives, like every day.
Oh, I know. We're going to be old one day and we're going to be like talking to kids. It's like, you need to do this stretch. And they're like, shut up, you old hag.
I just wish like when I was younger, I knew all this shit.
I know.
Even though I'm 28, so I'm still young. But like when I was 18, I wasn't doing this shit. And also like, people make fun of you for stretching when you're young.
I know.
It's like, why are you fucking 18? Why are you stretching?
You think you're so fucking cool? You're gonna ski so fucking good because you stretch? Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. It's worth a shot.
I know.
Oh, yeah, I remember being made fun of now that you say that.
I've been made fun of for stretching a lot. But it is what it is. Gotta do it.
There's nothing less sexy than, like, not being able to bend over and pick something up because you're so stiff. Like, give me a break.
Yeah, or be like bedridden.
Can't get down in your car. Whenever I see guys,
being depressed because you can't ski, and you're gonna be an asshole because you can't ski. You know what I mean?
We definitely know some skiers who have in their retirement bought cool little hot rod cars that they can't get in and out of because it's too low and they don't have the mobility. So don't be that guy.
So to answer the question, though, we do ski sore.
But do we? Because we work out a lot of the soreness first.
Yeah, but I still ski sore. When I'm sore in the morning. I still ski. But like, also you can manage your expectations. Like if you're super sore, just do doubles and not ski the shortest lines too. And so you can still pound out really solid reps when you're, you know, a little fatigued.
That really comes back to kind of the core of what skier die is. Find a way to try. It doesn't have to be 100% every day, but find a way to get better, whether today actually getting better meant working on your stretching or if it is just doing doubles,
yeah,
over doing nothing at all.
What if you do a rest day? It's not a rest day. You have to stretch. You have to move around. You have to get blood flowing. Because if you sit on the couch on your rest day all day, you're going to be fucked the next day.
Rest day does not mean sitting with your shoulders rounded and crushing five beers and being dehydrated and tight and sore. Like, that's not a rest day. That is a...
That's a step backwards.
That's a setback day. And now you need a rest day. And then you got to start skiing again. So.
Yeah. And yeah, that perpetuates the issue.
But that's me being hardcore, and that's why...
That's not that hardcore. Like, just... How about just... If you have a rest day, take a mile walk, mile to a mile and a half walk, at least once, and stretch for a combined 30 minutes. Not even. Okay, how about a combined 20 minutes? And then you'll be so much better off.
Tie it to things you like to do. Walk the dog. Take your kids for a walk. Teach your kids how to stretch. Who can do the stretch the best? You know, kids learn from watching and observing. And so, like, I mean, we don't have kids yet, so I'm saying this, like, I know what I'm talking about, but we have kids.
That would definitely turn into a max push-up challenge, no doubt about it.
What four-year-old do you know is doing push-ups till failure? All right, back to what I was saying. When we have kids, I hope that we continue these habits so they watch us, and they go, okay, that's how you do that. That's something people do, and they just learn it a little bit inherently. So I think there's a way to tie it to other things in your life that bring you joy. Not just isolate yourself and stretch. But it all comes down to taking care of your body and dare I say, loving your body and cherishing it. It's a great weapon when you take care of it.
What if today you started building a foundation of healthy habits and healthy living day to day? And a year from now, think about how much better you'll feel, right?
You know what saying I heard the other day that I got fucking excited about? You can either say today, you can either say one day or this is day one.
That's good.
So, all right, we gave you two stretches as your homework. And the question we want you to ask yourself is this a one day or is today day one? That was good. We're back.
All right, with that, we'll leave you.
Thanks, guys. We've got new stuff coming to the Ski or Die shop. Gearing up for Worlds. We did a couple regional Ski or Die shirts, one for Tejas, for Mr. Stevie Man, and one for the Midwest girl over here. So stay tuned for those. Artwork is in the works. And we're going to be demoing some like athletic material t-shirts. More like that gym kind of fitness, dare I say, dry fit. I mean, I don't want to get trademark violation there because that's a Nike thing, but that kind of material. So we're getting some samples. We're going to try them out. We'll let you guys know what we think of it. So yeah, keep your eyes peeled for that because it'll be probably our last drop before 2024.
I want to try this real quick. Ready?
Yeah.
TXs. Oh, that was cool.
Was it?
Yeah.
Do you feel pretty good right now?
TXs.
Oh my God. All right, we're done. Bye. All right, guys, episode's over. Thanks so much for listening. And if you want to rep the Ski or Die cause, head on over to skiordie.shop. See you next time.